Space.
Time.
The fundamental elements that define our human existence. But what are they really? What does it mean to be somewhere?
Is Wisconsin an airplane hangar in Oshkosh? A warehouse in Darien?
Or is Wisconsin cyberspace? Is Wisconsin Delaware?
And even if you know where you are, can you be sure when you are? Or is the chronological order we rely on but a mere illusion?
If a presidential candidate files paperwork after 5 o'clock, who's to say it's after 5 o'clock?
What is 5 o'clock? When does it begin? Whose clock are we using?
Holy mackerel, guys.
Yeah, we've got a lot of effing stuff to talk about this week.
Well, folks, this is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel Waite.
This week on the podcast, the big questions. And some stuff about the DNC, the Trump campaign, and Kanye West. So, guys, this week was supposed to be the week that the Democratic National Convention was going to happen in Milwaukee, and it pretty much did not happen.
Well, it happened. In Milwaukee is, I guess, all relative.
I'm going to say not. I'm going to come down on the side of counterpoint. It was not in Milwaukee.
That is fair. I think kind of the thing for me that was, we knew that it was going to happen this way, but was sort of surreal for me starting off this week, Monday morning, first day of the convention. I called into a breakfast that was kind of like a kickoff breakfast, and it was all of these Wisconsin politicians welcoming people who are watching online to Wisconsin. And, you know, they were in Wisconsin recording their remarks, obviously, but it was just so strange to know that, like, they were speaking to, I think it was about 200 people that had streamed that particular event, and they're just, you know, sitting at their computers in their homes and all across the country, presumably, and we're just, like, welcoming them to the idea of Wisconsin, I guess. It felt kind of surreal and sad and sort of like, the hosts were trying to hold on to the way the event was going to be, but it definitely wasn't.
There's been a lot of that going around this week, this idea that in Wisconsin is cyberspace, and it right. just, it does get me a little bit. That is not the way it works. I am a firm believer in physical space. And human beings, and I plan to get back to that someday once all this is over. But I would say we didn't really know going into the week, like, what a virtual convention would be. You know, there was something was going to be at Milwaukee, and then as you watch the virtual convention over the week, kind of transformed into like a Delaware convention by the end. You know, we moved from the computer stuff and all the video, and like, all right, that you have to do that. There's a pandemic. Democrats have made the choice that, look, we're not gonna have a big in-person convention because of COVID-19. It wouldn't be safe. Okay. But then it kind of moved into like, hey, those are people in Delaware with fireworks. And we could have done that in Wisconsin, darn it. We have fireworks here and parking lots and people. So that was sort of like the evolution of emotions for me, a Wisconsinite.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there definitely was kind of that move over the week from that point at the very beginning that I was talking about, where people were still welcoming kind of the online crowd to Wisconsin in this like philosophical, metaphysical sort of way, I guess. And then as the week went on, there was some outrage about the logo actually taking Wisconsin out, you know, the image of Wisconsin out of the DNC 2020 logo and putting in the whole country instead. And it's sort of like we were slowly erased from
That's a true story too. Laurel's not making that up. There was a Wisconsin was in the logo and then suddenly one day we weren't.
Right. There's definitely like a ghosting parallel. We talked about this. It really felt like it was sort of like a it's not you, it's me. and there was something that Delaware had that they're just the connection was better. I don't know.
But I think Delaware had Joe Biden is the thing. I've studied it. I've studied it. And it seems like that may be a factor in all this.
I mean, I think one thing to point out, aside from like, you know, our hurt feelings or, you know, whatever about how we thought the convention was going to be here and it wasn't, there are real impacts to the way things went as opposed to how they were supposed to. I mean, you know, there were 50,000 people who were supposed to be coming into Milwaukee and seeing the city. There was an estimated $200 million economic impact that was supposed to come from it. And that just did not happen for the city. And there was the idea that the Democratic Party was sort of shining a light on how important Wisconsin is for this election after back in 2016, the candidate not even coming to Wisconsin. And now it's looking very likely that Joe Biden, again, is probably not going to come to Wisconsin. And so there's some like tangible issues here too.
Yeah. And I do want to say, I don't want to sound like we're belittling the decision to not pack thousands of people into an indoor arena based on what we know about COVID-19. But we do have to like wonder, what does this mean? We know like economically, it's quite a big hit for Milwaukee, which was expecting this to be its moment to shine. And then it is an open question to me at this point. What does this mean for all that love that Democrats were going to give Wisconsin in the name of securing Wisconsin in the 2020 election? You know, they could still win Wisconsin, but this little extra jolt that they were going to get from the convention, I'm not saying that Wisconsin voters are going to like punish them for not having the convention here, but they're not probably going to reward them.
I don't want to, you know, ruminate too much on the things that I personally felt or missed.
Is about us, Laurel.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes,
specifically.
Yes. Well, I mean, I feel like, you know, one of the things that I was kind of interested in and looking forward to in a way was how all of the speeches, especially from kind of the headliners, might reference things going on in Wisconsin, you know, social issues, economic issues. Sometimes being the host state sort of gets you a little bit more of a...
We get pandered to.
Yeah, exactly. Like there would be, I think, you know, some references to cheese curds and the Packers and beer in some of the speeches, you know, sort of those like eye roll things that you have your bingo card during the speeches and you like, you know, mark them off. I just feel like some of those silly things we didn't get, which is unfortunate. I'm also like sad that we never got insight into what substantive policy things they would have brought up about Wisconsin. Like, would Foxconn have been mentioned? Would they have talked about, you know, segregation in Milwaukee? Would they have talked about, you know, what it's like to be Black in Wisconsin and the disparities here? Like, the issues in the state didn't get additional examination either. And, you know, we never know the extent to which that would happen. But that's something that I was definitely interested in seeing. And now we're just not going to know.
I mean, I think it's important to point out, though, that we weren't getting as much attention as we were expecting this week from Democrats. But boy, were we getting some attention from Republicans this week.
We sure were. And I think it's really interesting to talk about this because I did an interview late last week with Barry Burden, who's the director of the Elections Research Center at UW-Madison. And he said that it's really unusual for a president in particular to kind of host, quote unquote, counter programming during the other party's convention. Normally, the president kind of sits back and lets the other party have its time and the spotlight. In the interview, Barry Burton said that's not in the president's DNA to do something like that. And I think it was really on full display because not only did he not, you know, sit back and not have events, he came to the state that Democrats were supposed to come to and didn't. So it was just a huge political statement this week that the president was here, his son was here, and the vice president was here too, all within like 72 hours.
Not subtle at all. Like, and they were like, hey, gosh, where's Joe Biden? You know,
mm-hmm.
weren't they supposed to be here? So not subtle at all. You did see a pretty sharp contrast too in terms of how the parties view campaigning in the age of COVID-19. And I'm thinking most specifically, Laurel, about the event that you covered because Donald Trump was at an airport hangar, so outdoors. I'm not saying like people had 6 feet between them, but it was an outdoor location. Mike Pence, who was the head of the coronavirus task force for the White House, was inside a warehouse full of people who were kind of close together, not wearing masks, like for the most part in the pictures that you sent, Laurel. Like mm-hmm. that was not an ideal situation that was, you know, that crowd brought together by the vice president.
And so, Laurel, you mentioned we didn't really get to hear some of the things that Democrats would have said about Wisconsin. What did we hear from Mike Pence and Donald Trump and Eric Trump when they were here this week?
Well, I think I'll put Eric Trump's event to the side a little bit. He talked to police officers in Milwaukee and talked kind of about the Trump administration's support for law enforcement. In contrast to the defund the police movement. So that was kind of its own thing. The president and vice president focused for the most part on the economy. And I think, you know, from the vice president's speech, there were kind of a few sections that it was divided into. I think, first of all, he talked about the coronavirus pandemic and how, you know, the Trump administration is working on economic recovery. How the country's opening back up again, it's doing so safely. He made a comment, one of the biggest applause lines, actually, I think, of the whole speech was, you know, we're opening up schools, we're getting kids back to school. And I thought that was interesting and really speaks to kind of the base of the crowd that comes to this sort of event at noon on a Wednesday. These are the folks that are among that. It's not a majority of people in Wisconsin that support opening schools back up. So that's kind of the audience that was there at these events. He didn't really go into depth about COVID-19. I felt like, at least to me, it was sort of the elephant in the room. He said that he thinks, based on briefings that he's gotten, there will be a vaccine before the end of the year. He said that, you know, President Trump's leadership had really shone through on COVID-19 from the beginning of the pandemic and sort of lauded that. But for the most part, it was about, you know, sort of economic achievements and the economic path forward during the pandemic and after it.
And also a fair bit of taunting Democrats for not being there.
Oh, I think that's going to be a huge theme over the next, what, do we have 75 days or something until the election now? During the speech, the vice president said something about, you know, this is the number of days it's been since Joe Biden has been to Wisconsin. I got an email from Republicans later that day or maybe the next day with an updated number or the same number, depending on when I got the email. I don't remember. But I think that's going to be a consistent theme is we are here in Wisconsin. We're here for you. We're visiting you. We're paying attention to you. And Democrats aren't.
So jumping back to the Democrats, what did we hear from, you know, the Wisconsin Democrats who were participating in the Wisconsin, not so Wisconsin DNC? You know, we got a little tiny bit of attention. What did we hear from them?
it was pretty brief for most of them. You know, we were kind of divvying up some of the speeches to cover them off and on through the week. And so I was ready for my first assignment. Gwen Moore is going to speak at the Democratic National Convention. And if you've heard Gwen Moore speak at like a state party convention before, you know, she can go on for a while. Like, I've heard her take a 20-minute time block and blow it out to about 45 minutes because she just gets the crowd going. She gets into it. She just goes wherever, like, the moment takes her. And this was not that. This was, I checked it on my audio file, 82 seconds, 82 seconds for Gwen Moore to kind of kick off the DNC. You know, she talked about you could have been in Milwaukee, but, you know, that the party would, I guess, bring the nation together through the virtual convention. I don't think you would say there was a lot of substance in her speech. She's proud of her city. She's proud of Kamala Harris too, but it was real quick.
There were also a few other Wisconsinites that spoke, a few of which stand out for what it's worth, a few reasons.
Yeah, we can actually, I mean, we can kind of go through real quick who did speak. Mandela Barnes, Lieutenant Governor, cast Wisconsin's votes for Joe Biden in the roll call of states. Mayor Barrett kicked off one of the nights of the convention, but I think he did it before the broadcast started. So now getting to the last two speeches, one that I covered was Governor Tony Evers, and he didn't even get 82 seconds. He got more like 62 seconds, but guys, he made it count. Tony Evers went off script at the end of his remarks, and he decided to deliver this message to a national audience.
Especially during challenging times like these, the problems we face can only be solved by all of us together. Holy mackerel, folks. Let's get to work.
Holy mackerel, folks.
You know, the phrase
sweeping the nation.
Yeah, the Democratic Party has already, I guess, started selling holy mackerel. I think they're bumper stickers or maybe just regular stickers. But I think it's officially a thing now. Holy mackerel. He's been saying it for a long time, but like to make the choice to do it during the DNC, like that was, and to go off script to do it, it's a decision.
He's given himself a catchphrase.
He has given himself a few catchphrases now. Like it's getting sitcom-esque here. Like he's just dropping holy mackerel to get, he's going to start carrying around his own like canned laughter box where... When he says holy mackerel, there's the crowd in the background. He's also got, I know folks is not necessarily a catchphrase, but he kind of uses it like one. And then he's got the Egg McMuffin thing too, where he's on these Zoom calls and he's like, look, I got an Egg McMuffin because I eat the same thing every day, you know, and people like it. I will remind you that Democrats did not like it when Scott Walker showed his brown bag lunch every day and his ham sandwich. And now their guy is showing off that Egg McMuffin with like a badge of honor. So Tony Evers is like, he's like kind of, he needs a few more catchphrases to rotate in there, I think, because I'm starting to notice him when he says these. Oh yeah, at a Zoom call the next day, he also did like wear a freaking mask.
Oh, yep, that definitely.
Which was
that's
also
emerging.
A repeat. I'm just picturing like Woody from Toy Story, but like a Tony Evers doll with like the pull string in the back, and it has different catchphrases. You know, holy mackerel. Wear a freaking mask.
Maybe this can be our
let's get to work, folks.
This should be our side gig, making these pull string dolls for different, because we could, I mean, Governor Walker certainly had them too. His would have been like working and winning and something about
they're
Kohl's
paying
cash
me for the shirt.
And, yep.
Yep.
Open for business.
This is it. This is a solid business idea.
Yeah.
Darn it.
I don't
I
even
we
know if
we're sharing it on the podcast.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't include this. Like, John, maybe cut this out because I think when we sell Evers and Walker dolls with pull strings, That's our ticket out of here, man.
Woo. Yeah. No more slaving away in the podcast mines.
Uh-uh. Early retirement for us.
Speaking of noticeable lines, we heard from Tammy Baldwin, too. Laurel, you were covering that last night. And what was her line that got the attention?
So she had a pretty like prime spot. She was speaking in the last hour leading up to Joe Biden, and you know, started talking about healthcare and kind of focusing on pre-existing conditions and the provision of the Affordable Care Act that has to do with banning insurers from denying coverage to people because of pre-existing conditions. And we've heard her talk about that a lot, especially in her last Senate campaign. Then she's kind of going through the remarks, and then she drops this line, which I feel like would have gotten a huge reaction if it had been in person.
You see, there's another part of my story, the part where I ran for office, the part where I served in Congress, the part where I worked with Joe Biden and Barack Obama to make sure kids and grandkids, if they're dependents, can stay on their parents' health insurance until they're 26. We got that done. And yes, it was a big effing deal.
So there you go. I mean, I feel like this is one of those things you're sort of living in another world when you're watching a political speech. Or I think about when I'm in a joint finance committee hearing and someone makes like a very weak joke and everyone in the room is like, "Ho ho!"
Are you saying that was a weak joke?
I'm just saying that we all like collectively like grasped our pearls and we're like, oh my goodness, she did.
That's
not.
That's true. Yeah, like, oh my goodness, she said. I'm pondering here. Can we say effing? I think so. Yeah,
we did it in the intro.
Oh, that's true. And yeah,
it's, yeah. I just we've figured already...
maybe you'll bleep it though, and people will think no. We said the real thing.
But yeah, I remember hearing that and when I was covering the speech, and she only she spoke for, again, it was a short speech. It was about 3 minutes. And hearing her say that, I was like, "Welp, that's my quote." That's one of them.
So that's a lot of time spent on convention talk. There was one other thing that we wanted to talk about this week, which is the ongoing saga of rapper Kanye West trying to get on the ballot in Wisconsin. And so we have some more news on that if we want to give a quick update.
A quick update.
I mean, quick is relative because what is time?
What is time? So just don't look at your watches, and I'm going to go on for a few hours now.
Sean needs like a spin-off podcast just about Kanye.
Yeah, if you're kind of into the details of the Kanye story, oh, Thursday's Elections Commission meeting was for you. Man, if you like the hair-splitting details, it was the best meeting ever, man. They even called staff to come testify before the virtual commission. So they really stepped through like second by second of what happened when Kanye West's campaign attorney delivered the petitions to the Wisconsin Elections Commission after 5 p.m. sharp on August 4th. And I mean, it boiled down to like, when did they walk through the front door of the building? When were they in the door that's on the ground floor of this building?
And how did they get that timestamp?
They have multiple videos. Okay, they have a video from Matt Smith of WISN-TV, which we have talked about. There's a video from a Democratic operative who was also there taking a video with his Apple Watch in the foreground showing what time it was. So those established the time. Then they have testimony from the Elections Commission staff who met Lane Rulon, the Republican attorney helping West, met her at the door. He said it was around 14 seconds after 5 o'clock because he checked. He did testify that he uses a $25 Amazon watch. It's not an atomic clock, he said.
Oh my God.
So that must be weighed in the record. But then then there was a question of, okay, when did they get on the elevator up to the third floor where the Elections Commission is located? Because Bob Spindell, a Republican commissioner on the Elections Commission, was saying, I think, you know, once you're in the elevator, the Elections Commission's in possession of your nominating petitions. So it's a novel argument, I'd say, the elevator argument. But it was raised. And so from it, as best we know, the staffer who was in the elevator said it was, well, it's 5 o'clock and around 50 seconds when he looked at his watch and they were still in the elevator. Then they bring on, what time did she arrive at the front desk? And they call up another staffer and he said it was 5:01 or 5:02. And that they didn't touch her petitions for a few more minutes because they didn't know what to do. Nobody's ever arrived that late, they said. So they went and checked with their supervisor. And then, like, you know, the attorney had to number the pages. And then they had the petition. So the Elections Commission, 5 commissioners said, nah, it's a late registration and you do not get on the ballot, Kanye West. That included, remember, this is a 3-3 committee. So that included Dean Knutson, a former Republican lawmaker, and Marge Bostelman, who is a clerk. It also included the 3 Democrats on the committee. It was Spindell was the lone no vote, said that Kanye West should have been on the ballot. And he was like super critical of Democrats for challenging. And he said, like, they're trying to suppress the, you know, take away a voice from black voters. Bob Spindell is white. All the commissioners are white. So then that's the last step for the commission, basically, is they're done with it. Now it's up to the West campaign, though. If they want, they can challenge this in court. I know that probably everybody's like psyched about the battle over the rep superstar. The Green Party discussion was pretty interesting, guys. If you're into like time and like time loops and, you know, infinity.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about that challenge so far on the podcast. You want to get into it a little bit?
Yes, I do. This commission, the Elections Commission, it is relatively, it's a new beast, right? It hadn't been around that long. They created it with 3 Republicans, 3 Democrats. And the question has been asked, what would happen if they, like, they have a lot of 3-3 votes where they can't agree. But on this, the commission is supposed to make a recommendation one way or the other about ballot access. And with the Green Party candidates, which were challenged by a Democratic attorney and a Democrat who lives in Madison, not by the Democratic Party, but we'll say Democrats. In the case of the Green Party challenge, you had Republicans defending the Green Party candidates, Democrats saying, no, they didn't follow the rules. They didn't file a response to the formal challenge. They could have. They have attorneys. They chose not to. They don't get on the ballot. And so you had this back and forth going for hours, guys. And this is on the final night of the DNC. These are kind of political animals that sit on this commission. They want to watch the speeches, but they are fighting over what are we going to do with these Green Party nominating petitions. And they took
the Green Party petitions. Was this a timing issue as well?
No, well, yes, I mean, sort of. It was Angela Walker, the vice presidential nominee for the Greens, moved somewhere during the petition drive. The Wisconsin Greens did not realize this until late July. And so they had circulated all these petitions with her old address on it.
Oh.
And then they realized, hey, we got to stop doing that. We have to start circulating with the new address. So they turn in petitions with 2 addresses. And Democrats say, you know, all these ones with the old address are invalid. That's not her current address. She could have perhaps, or the Green Party could have perhaps, I don't know, cleared that up by filing an affidavit saying, this is the date that I moved. You know, this is the date I was at the new address. So, you know, you count these signatures up to a certain date and you count them on the new petitions after a certain date. They didn't do that. And so Democrats wanted to deny the petitions. Republicans wanted to grant them. Remember, 4 years ago, Jill Stein won 31,000 votes in Wisconsin for the Green Party. Donald Trump won the state by fewer than 23,000 votes. So that is why these third party candidacies and challenges are significant. So the commission just did like, I think they did 5-3-3 votes before they basically just threw their hands in the air and gave up. You know, they just eventually decided, leave it to a court. They didn't. Mm-hmm. They broke down.
So if there's no court challenge, the Green Party isn't on the ballot then?
They are not on the ballot. No, okay. They're not on the ballot. The only affirmative vote that they took was they voted to say that they had at least 1,700 signatures or something like that. But that's not enough. You got to have 2,000. So for people who watch the Elections Commission, it was pretty weird.
Well, holy mackerel, guys, that was a lot. But thanks for taking the time and giving the space to talk it all through.
John, if you're going to say holy mackerel, say it with some more effing enthusiasm next time, okay?
Yeah, folks really aren't going to believe you unless you've got the oomph behind the holy mackerel.
Although I'm not sure that the governor says it with a whole lot of oomph sometimes. He's pretty chill.
That's true.
Well, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
Holy mackerel, folks. Do you want to get new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast delivered to you almost every single effing week? Well, all you have to do is subscribe to the show. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. While you're there, leave a rating or review of the show to help other people find it. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politicspodcast.